Choke points. The zipper merge crusade marches on. The quest to get every driver to learn the proper way to merge is getting another crack in the legislature. The chief judge. I knew I was going to mess this up.
I wrote it that way. Just
I know. The chief zipper merge czar is now on his soapbox. Chris,
yes,
what's the latest?
Okay, State Representative Jesse Young is back with another attempt to get the zipper merge put into the state driver's education program. His first attempt died in the Rules Committee after passing the House Transportation Committee last session. The bill is really simple. It adds education on the proper way to merge when two lanes are becoming one, and it would create a poster or pamphlet or some kind of media for your drivers who are getting their renewals.
It puts a couple questions on the test, and then when people go to renew, it gives them a pamphlet, ideally, or some form of medium to remind people about how you're supposed to merge together when you do the zippering.
This is long overdue. One of the biggest congestion problems in our region comes from people failing to understand the proper way to merge. And merging is barely covered in the driver's manual. It's half of one page. So let's go over the zipper merge. Say you're driving up to a construction zone on the freeway, and you're in the far right lane. That lane is ending in about a half mile. The lane you need to merge into is bumper to bumper. Do you A, get over as fast as you can, B, stop in your lane and wait for somebody to let you in, or C, drive all the way to the end of the line and then get over? The answer, of course, is C. Yes, use the available space in your lane, and when you get to the end, you merge in, alternating with the car to the left of you.
And usually what we see, and every one of us probably has some practical experience having done this, is that typically the people in the lane that's being merged into feel as though they're aggrieved that someone's potentially cutting them.
And we all know what that leads to.
And then what happens is you got people starting to try to block people from actually merging in that way. And then you cause greater congestion and potentially road rage and everything else. When if everybody just understood that in some of these times you alternate the way you merge, I think we'd get down the road a little bit quicker, if you pardon the pun.
Early merging causes unnecessary backups. How many times have you seen this? You're entering the freeway in congested traffic, and someone just makes a 45-degree angle to the left across the lines to squeeze into that next lane. Not only is that dangerous, it backs up the lane being merged into, and it backs up the entry lane, so you're actually blocking two lanes. Here's a concrete example for you, and people can think about this if they've driven this. This, the daily choke point we have in Tacoma, actually kind of in that area where we have this crash this morning, right where Highway 16 joins northbound I-5. The right lanes on those collector distributor lanes from the downtown entrances and Highway 16, those right lanes slowly go away one at a time the further north that you go. People fill the far left lane as soon as they can, and that backs up all the way almost to the end of Highway 16. That causes a backup on the freeway. It causes a backup in those CD lanes. So stay to the right and merge when your lane ends. The pavement that the engineers gave you is there for a reason, and drivers already on the freeway need to stop veering over to block you or refusing to let you in. They are the ones who are doing it wrong. Representative Young says it's time to come together as a state and pick up the zipper merge mantle.
If we're ever going to unify, this is the way that we do it. Let's make traffic easier for folks. Help sure that everybody knows that whether they're in the lane that's being merged into or the lane that's being merged away from, they know how to do it right, so that not only does traffic flow smoother, quicker, it also keeps everybody happy.
Now, I've been preaching the zipper merge for almost 7 years now, and I'm going to continue to do this. And again, this doesn't apply all the time. Okay, this applies really only in congested traffic. If traffic is moving, you just merge like normal, right? You get over when you have an opportunity. It's only when that lane that being merged into is backed up as well. This also does not apply to exit-only lanes. Once you get that double dotted line, you had better be over. A perfect example of that is southbound I-5 at 85th. You come out of Northgate and people are zooming in that far right lane. Well, it's an exit-only lane at that point, so at that point, you need to get over. So there's some do's and don'ts, but it's pretty simple, and people are starting to get it, but there's a lot more education that's necessary, especially with young drivers.
I like that. Use the pavement the engineers gave you. Actually, use the pavement you paid for.
Exactly.
Exactly. If only there was a way to hammer this home. Suppose we dig back into the archives. I believe this is back from 2017, and what I believe may be the finest parody song ever written about merging.
How to merge? One word. Zipper.
Oh, don't you merge too soon, not when your lane is free. to the end and then pull up and zip with me. This merger is our destiny. I say, ooh, ooh, pull up and zip with me.
In slowing traffic or lower speeds, when your lane is ending, drive all the way until it ends and then you merge over.
I was driving home at night. I jammed up on ramp to I-5. Then I saw her on the right. I knew we were bound to get together, bound to get together. She flashed her lights, I don't know how it happened. She looked at me and she said, oh, don't you merge too soon, not when your lane is free. Drive to the end and then pull up and zip with me. This merger is our destiny. I say, ooh, ooh, pull up and zip with me. I drove ahead, I think I see my future. My lane will end. This is my last chance. I signaled right. I saw her in my mirror. I read her lips and she said,
use the amount of pavement that you have. You're not cutting the line. You're not cheating anybody.
Oh, don't you merge too soon. Not when your lane is free. Drive to the end and then pull up and zip with me. This merger is our destiny. I said, ooh, ooh, pull up. Oh, don't you merge too soon. Not when your lane is free. Drive to the end and then pull up and zip with me. This merger is our destiny. I say, ooh, ooh, pull up and zip with me.
It's sort of like holding the door open for the person behind you, right? Like, we always do that.
Pull up and zip with me.
Right? I was just thinking about it, going, okay, how can we really explain this to people?
Get up to the front and then get over.
Pull up and zip with me.
We'd offer that as a free public service announcement to the state DOT. We did not write the melody, though, so maybe some rights issues here. The Kansas DOT has already created the pinnacle of zipper merge PSAs with their animated talking traffic cones.
If they just do the zipper merge, that line wouldn't be so long.
Zipper merge? I don't have a zipper.
Yep. Remember, these are talking cones.
Talking traffic
move
cones.
Over as soon as you see the merge sign?
Not always. When traffic is really backed up, the best thing to do is not merge early.
There you are.
Won't I be cutting the line? Says one traffic cone to the other.
I still don't think it's fair for people to cut to the front of the line.
But you know, if you have two lanes coming up to that merge, then there's no long line to cut in front of, is there?
Oh.
I get it. I get it. It's not easy being a traffic cone.
No, it is not.
No. Time for the annual sticker shock. Property tax bills are arriving in the mail. With the report, here's Cairo Radio's Hannah Scott.
Eric and Aggie couldn't believe it when she saw the spike in her family's property tax bill.
We were floored by basically the same level of increases, and in some cases more than we even saw pre-pandemic. And you know, talking through some of the numbers, you know, first of all, we are a small family run portfolio of properties, right? Like, my parents have been here. They immigrated here from Hungary in 56. They were buying property when everybody told them they were crazy, when everyone was leaving. Literally the billboard of, you know, the last person that leaves Seattle, please turn off the lights. They were buying at, you know, 13% interest rates and sweating it every single month if they were going to make it, right? And they really believed in this American dream. And so they passed that on and they've kept it the same, essentially, since they've owned the properties and even in some cases developed them themselves very modestly.
Now he says.
And so looking through some of these bills, one of our tenants, if we were to push that all on them, would be paying, in essence, an additional 3 months worth of rent due to the tax increases alone.
And in the midst of the pandemic that has already hit landlords like her parents hard.
This is the same small business that was shut down by our governor and told to do it for the good of Washington while our governor sits there and doesn't take any ounce of a pay cut. There is absolutely no recourse for the mismanagement of funds and basically, you know, the ineptness of our government.
Others who spoke to Cairo 7 also frustrated.
It's forcing the locals out, the people that live here their whole life. It's just driving us out and letting other people come in, I guess.
It's bad on a lot of people, especially during the pandemic, and people can't afford food and other things and all these other taxes and everything coming up. It's just, it's not good.
Across the county, property taxes will increase by an average of 4%, according to the county assessor's office, though some areas where voters approved tax hikes will see double-digit increases. South King County property owners are hit the hardest this year, with 18% spikes in Algona, 15% in Maple Valley, 13% in Pacific, and an 11% increase in Enumclaw. Those areas are seeing those increases because of voter-approved levies for several school districts, a regional fire district, and other issues. Where places like Auburn, Kent, Bellevue, Fall City, and more all approved levies for fire services. There was also a countywide measure passed for upgrades to Harborview Medical Center. The property tax increases will cover the repayment of the bonds. All told, property taxes across King County are increasing by more than $250 million this year. This as people struggle to hold on to their homes and businesses. The taxes on the bills just going out are based on assessed values from last January before the pandemic. But that's not even where the hit is coming from, according to the county assessor. Under state law, property tax increases are capped at 1%. But when voters give the okay for those levies or new tax measures locally, that increases their property tax bills. County Assessor John Wilson.
Roughly 43% of your property tax bill is driven by voter-approved levies.
Wilson says the real issue is...
The problem we have fundamentally is with our tax structure that we rely so heavily on property taxes.
Cold comfort to those like Nagy, who stresses, in the end, this is going to hurt the city she grew up in and barely recognizes at this point.
And we as citizens need to go back and remind our government that they work for us. And until we all get angry enough to really have a voice and create some change, this will continue to go on. And there will not be one piece of affordable anything in Seattle. I guarantee you.
She was especially upset by the note accommodating her family's property tax bill, which explains the high tax increases are used for investments in schools, parks, and public safety.
Meanwhile, in King County, my kids can't go to a park because there's fecal matter and needles everywhere. My kids aren't going to school because the schools are closed. And they're doing this with a straight face as they're kicking all of us down during this pandemic. It is absolutely abhorrent. I cannot believe that this is happening. Got rid of all the police. There is no public safety. Like, at what point in time do they say, God, geez, you know, we sold them this and we actually delivered. And even if they don't say that, just say, we couldn't quite deliver because of COVID.
Well, she's certainly right about the messes in the parks. That needs to be cleaned up. But on the tax system, this is the tax system. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you want a tax system that doesn't punish you at a time when your income is down, what you want is an income tax. But the taxpayers of this state do not want an income tax. And so we have taxes that really don't change with the economy, which is why Washington State's budget is, I mean, have you seen what's happened to Oregon's budget with the income tax? I mean,
yeah,
it's way down.
Yeah.
Whereas Washington has managed to keep a lot of its projects going. So, I mean, what do people want instead?
You know, they want their cake and eat it too, perhaps. It just depends. I think this is particularly hard because of the pandemic. And this is particularly concerning for Eric and Nagy, who you just heard there.
Yeah.
Because landlords are already being hit really, really, really hard because of the eviction moratoriums.
Yeah, I know. I get that.
So the concern is that this could throw, you know, her parents are going to stay, but there's going to be other landlords that this could throw them out. And then in the end, you're going to end up with less affordable housing, less affordable things to rent. And that's what she's kind of talking about there to one degree. But, people can't afford to pay this. The seniors, last year alone, there were a 300% increase in those who applied for a deferment for were seniors that could qualify for that. That's huge. They're expecting more appeals this year because of these bills. And I think that people were not expecting it because we had some extra help last year on the bills, right? They were delayed and you could do payment plans and various things. There's some payment plan opportunity now, but it's not going to work for everybody. There's also a bill in the legislature that's making its way through where if you're particularly hit hard, you might be able to defer. So there is some possibility of help, but I don't think anybody expected these 18% increases.
Right. Well, I just saw in the legislative roundup that this income tax proposal, they don't call it income tax, but that's back. So is it because of problems like this, are people going to support that? I mean, if you were to join an income tax of some kind with substantial property tax relief, do you think that situations like this would make that any more popular?
You know, I've not seen that. I will say that. You still have your same people on every side and very, very few who are in the middle who say, yes, this is what we need. You know, we don't want to have that big, giant bill. And this is how we're going to change our regressive tax system. I've not heard anybody switch sides yet, but you're absolutely right. If you want to avoid these types of situations, then you have to approve some sort of progressive revenue.
Yeah. I mean, what the complaint is, look, I don't have the money coming in to pay my taxes. But in this state, the answer is too bad. The taxes you pay don't depend on the money you have coming in. Whereas if it was an income tax, you could say, I haven't got the money, I can't pay my taxes. And say, fine. That's what the income tax is all about.
So, yeah. And it's the age-old argument in this state. I'll tell you this. I tend to believe that we will see this capital gains tax proposal pass this year. Mm-hmm. But it's not going to give anybody any relief anytime soon because that's going to be tied up in litigation for at least a couple of years probably. So
I don't think it's even linked to property tax relief, though, right?
No. It's not. But it's more linked to progressive revenue for, there's a couple of different versions. One, I think, invests in some specific stuff. It would end up in the general fund, could link to property tax relief. But that's the other thing, right? You have to hold the lawmakers accountable for the end. If they do get some progressive revenue, then you better give us the kind of relief that we've been asking for.
Hannah Scott. Thank you, Hannah.
You bet.
It's time for your daily dose of kindness. It's brought to you by Mike Novak and ListWithNovak.com. Michael Jordan is best known for what he's done on basketball courts as an NBA legend. But now, his generosity off the court is also becoming pretty legendary. He's making a $10 million donation to two medical clinics in his hometown in North Carolina. CBS's Gail King tells us more.
This comes after he already donated $7 million back in 2017 to open two clinics in Charlotte. The Michael Jordan Family Clinics provide primary medical care and mental health services to underinsured or uninsured communities. Dr. Michael Hoban has worked very closely with Michael Jordan on his efforts. He told us how the clinics impact the community.
You have a place that's thinking more about just, here's a prescription, go take this medication, but really pulling in the pieces that may be barriers for them to achieve their best health and live their best quality of life.
Michael Jordan does so many things behind the scenes. This is one of the rare occasions where they're letting us know publicly what he's done. So bravo to him.
And those clinics are set to open early next year and should improve affordable access to health care.
And now from the G and Ursula Show, which begins at 9 o'clock right here on Cairo Radio, here is G. Scott. I was checking Fox News, G, to see if Cruz had any reply to this accusation that he sort of got out of town at the wrong time by traveling to Cancun at a time when his constituents in Texas were freezing in the dark. I see no mitigating circumstance. He apparently just had a vacation schedule.
He went from Lion Ted to Flying Ted. This is an example of, and by the way, this isn't just a Ted Cruz thing. This is a lot of politicians, bipartisan, if you will, both left and right. They do things like this. They pretend to care about their constituents. And in this time, in what Texas is going through, this man decides to go and leave, if you will, so he can go find heat, water, and electricity outside of the state while his constituents there in the state are struggling and going through a real tragic crisis right now. First of all, my prayers go up to all the families there in Texas. I really hope that it starts to heat up a little bit. This is, it's really unfortunate, Dave, that this has happened. I just could not imagine being in Texas right now and having no power, no heat.
Well, you remember the Hanukkah storm here, right? I forget how many weeks it went on for some people, but it is very scary when your house becomes as cold as it is outside and there's nothing you can do about it.
Very, very scary. So, I when I first saw it, Dave, I thought there's no way he would do that. I mean, I know Ted Cruz is Ted Cruz, but he wouldn't let the optics get out there, those bad optics out there, get out there like that. And yeah, come to find out, nobody is disputing those claims. So I just wonder, what does he do now in this situation, Dave?
Well, he's tweeted.
Does he fly back? Oh, he tweeted.
Yeah, he said, I'll quote it to you. This is from Fox, so you know it's true. A blizzard strikes Texas and our state shuts down. Not good.
he said.
Oh. Wow.
So he's aware that this is a very bad thing. And
I'm glad to do, and I'm glad Texas will now get to see who he really is in that situation. But
let me ask you this. You saw the story about that the mayor of a Texas town who said, quit whining, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, and he got hooted down for that. But I'll tell you, since going through the Nisqually earthquake, you realize that no one's coming to rescue you right away in disasters like this, especially if it's a disaster that affects millions of people, because there's just not that many first responders. You're going to have some kind of backup plan for things like this, aren't you?
Absolutely. I mean, we saw Katrina, Hurricane Katrina down there. We saw how slow it was for that response. I remember back in Chicago, back in the day in the mid-90s when they had a heat crisis where over 700 people died because of heat, right? Because it was so hot. And just like you would think that every home should have air conditioning, but that wasn't the case. So you're right, Dave. And speaking of that, it kind of makes you really start thinking, especially if you have family, like how prepared are you in the case of a crisis? Like we saw what happened in the beginning of the pandemic when a lot of people were going out to buy toilet paper during that time. But I don't know how prepared you'd be just with extra toilet paper. But it really makes you wonder, and you make a great point. Like, just so you know, if there is a natural disaster, help is not going to come immediately right away. It's going to be tough for that. So you're going to have to be at least prepared. They say, 3 days?
Yeah, well,
you need to be prepared.
At least. It's going to be weeks. In a thing like this where everybody is hurting, it's going to be a long time. And so they're going to focus on people who are in imminent danger of dying before those of us who are just inconvenienced. And, you know, having water and just a bucket of freeze-dried food, I think, ought to be.
I gotta say this. I think where my mistake that I made, Dave, in judging the crisis that is going on down in Texas is that, yes, we all saw the weather and we're like, oh, wow, that's crazy. I can't believe, you know, the South is getting weather like that. I didn't believe that it would actually last for days. You know what I mean? Yeah. I thought it would be a one-off thing. And I was watching Nick Allert on this morning. And right now, it's 24 degrees down there now. So it's gotten warmer. And so right now, there's no relief inside. I'm like, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I mean, it's been colder than Anchorage. And a couple of days ago, it was like down to one or two degrees.
Yes.
And again, when you see icicles forming inside your home, what do you do? So I would say have water. Now, of course, you got to keep it from freezing in a situation like that. But at least you got some. We save all our old T-shirts that aren't used for rags just for the day when you have to put 10 of them on because there's no heat. And like I say, having a little food standing by, not going to hurt.
Food standing by. And, of course, you're definitely going to need some portable chargers to make sure. Well, I know you can go to your car, but some portable chargers for your cell phone.
Yep. A radio with a fresh battery. G. Scott with Ursula, 9 o'clock this morning. Thanks, G.
Thank you.
To the shooting at the Seattle Police waterfront now, at the Seattle Police shooting at the waterfront, and we have the 911 calls and body camera footage released by the police, which shed new light on that shooting, which happened Tuesday night. The update from Cairo News Radio's Hannah Scott, we're going to warn you again, the sound of the incident is very disturbing.
Seattle Police, what are you reporting?
Hi, I've got one of my units that spotted a suicidal subject. He's got a knife to his neck.
It all started with this call to SPD from Port of Seattle Police just before 9:30 Tuesday night.
So white male, bald, black jacket, black pants. They didn't say anything about drugs or alcohol yet, right?
Did he have cut himself?
So he has cut himself now?
Yeah, he's cut himself now, yeah.
And still walking?
Yeah, still walking.
SPD arrived.
No, sounds like your guys are there with him. Yeah.
As officers arrive near Pier 56, footage shows the man near a wall armed with a large kitchen knife. Officers quickly try to get the man to drop it.
There he is, stop. Hold on, watch out, he's got a knife.
You need to stop.
But the man keeps moving toward them, and though his hands are raised, the knife is in his hands, which are waving erratically.
Stop where you're at.
As police continue to order him to drop that knife, he moves closer to the officers, begging them to kill him.
Stop where you're at. No! Get down on the ground! Stop!
Put the knife down! Put the knife down!
In a matter of seconds,
stop!
Other officers' footage shows what happened from a further distance, with one officer a ways back quickly running toward the scene before the shooting to try to get the situation under control.
Hey, somebody hold lethal. Somebody hold lethal. Massey, hold lethal for me. Stop, 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 stop.
In an initial statement from the scene Tuesday night, SPD said,
attempted to use a less lethal tool.
But the video footage does not seem to show any SPD officers using less lethal tools. SPD clarifying in its statement last night that it was actually the Port of Seattle police who initially tried to use less lethal tools that didn't have any effect. But it's not clear when exactly that happened. It is not shown on any of the video footage. And as usual, the deadly shooting of a man in crisis, leading to a crowd of about 100 outraged protesters hitting the streets around Westlake Park last night. And things got tense with some counter-protesters and citizen journalists. One man could be seen on a bicycle riding through the crowd spraying bear mace. And at one point, somebody pulled a gun.
The body cam footage didn't show anybody else around that guy. Had he been threatening anybody besides himself?
We don't have that information yet. The only information that has been publicly released, and I haven't even seen any witness accounts of anything, is that he had this knife and that at some point he cut himself. Again, it sounds like the Seattle police are saying that the Port of Seattle police had tried to engage with some form of less lethal means earlier, though, before that video footage. So that might have happened before they called SPD. It's not clear right now. They're just not saying.
Do you remember the incident some years back? I think it was a guy with a sword on Queen Anne. And I think they just sort of followed him, right? They just sort
slowly,
of,
a slow roll, like kind of behind
right,
him, yeah.
Until he got tired of it and, I guess, put it down. But, I mean, this guy was apparently by himself, only threatening himself. There wasn't anybody else there, as far as I could tell, in the police video.
And I haven't heard that said. And so this situation is the heart of the discussions going on in Seattle to Olympia to across the country. I mean, there are proposals right now in Olympia that would really get specific about when you can use this deadly use of force. But the overall discussion is why do we send police to engage with people who are in behavioral health crisis? Certainly when they're armed, do you just send somebody in the mental health industry out to deal with this guy? I don't think so, but the response with that much, that level of response, I think you're going to hear people argue that this could have been handled and de-escalated a different way. I don't know if that's true.
Well, you cover all these stories, I don't. So I'm out here watching this like everybody else and trying to figure out, okay, what would be reasonable? So he's by himself. He's obviously trying to commit suicide by cop. We don't want that to happen. Is there a provision for, and we don't want the cop to get hurt either, obviously.
Right.
So is there a way that he could, is there some kind of vest they can wear? So if he lunges at them, the knife does like wear a catcher's mask and some kind of vest. And there's a bunch of cops there. So there's backup in case the guy actually was able to get through and they could stop him with a gun if they had to, or just follow him until somebody comes with a net. I don't know. I mean, and drag him off to treatment.
And I think that's what they're trying to get to define right now. I think that's part of the actual conversation going on right now. You know, there's a reason suicide by cop is a term, because it's something that people have been able to accomplish. They know how to act in order to get the officers to fire. So they're trying, the lawmakers and the various people involved in these conversations are trying to come up with clear definitions to how this can be handled. I don't know. I mean, if you have your tactical vest on, sure, you're going to be protected there against the knife, but there's a whole lot of the rest of you as an officer that's exposed. And as an officer, you're thinking about the fact that you want to get home to your significant other
that's
and your
fair.
Children. And that's fair. there. So I don't know the right answer in this situation. I do know that this is going to really heighten tensions in the community.
Right. And this guy, was this guy one of those known persons, or was he a...
Not that I know of. They have not released the identity yet, and I've not seen any chatter anywhere about who this person might have been. So I don't know. It'll remain to be seen at this point.
Hannah Scott. Thank you, Hannah.
You bet.
Thanks for listening to Seattle's Morning News. I'm Dave Ross.
And I'm Colleen O'Brien. Thanks for listening to the show's podcast. We're happy you're here.
And you can keep up with the show and find some of the stories from today online at MyNorthWest.com.